One of my favorite foods and the name of this band, Cake, once said, "He's going the distance, he's going for speed," and this is the Fat Man Chronicles.
I was not hiding. I was unsure. And I was really right there. You hang around, you got me alone. You hang around, you got me alone.
You know, I actually lobby for Cake to be like a food group.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
Yeah, not at all, right? Welcome to episode 37 of the Fat Man Chronicles. I am Pete, and sitting alongside me, as always, is my beautiful wife, Gretchen. And we are a regular couple on the journey with you to health, fitness, weight loss, and a better life. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Well, why don't we start out by telling everybody what's in that bottle?
That bottle.
I mean, because I know people are on the edge of their seats.
They're looking
to know
forward.
What we're drinking.
Well, and tonight it's a little bit different.
It is.
You know, usually we do a red or maybe a rosé here. Usually not night. But tonight we have a Chardonnay, which I think a lot of our faithful listeners would be like, what? You guys Chardonnay? Because that's not our usual. But this is Rémy Chardonnay from Platte Vineyard in Sonoma Coast. I really should bring my glasses down here. But it's really good. I mean, for Chardonnay.
Yeah, you're
it's
not
2013. But I'm not a typical Chardonnay because I don't like oaky Chardonnays. That's not, I don't know. There's just something about them that hasn't been it's not my cup of tea. But this one is very tasty. I might have two glasses of it. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I had to do an email on this one for work.
Yes.
And it's perfectly aged. So people don't think about aging whites a lot.
Right, no. And you think you got to drink as soon as you get, basically. Right.
And this is one that needed the age. And there's some oak, about 30% new oak on this, but it's super balanced.
Yeah.
Nice
it's
minerality.
Really good.
And
it's really good.
It was very, very tasty with the pork tenderloin that you
yes,
made.
Yes, I made. I didn't.
Or pork loin.
Yes, that's a pork tenderloin that I did from our Eat Pappy. Oh, I said it right.
I think you said Eat Pappy.
Pappy? Happy? Eat healthy?
Eat Happy.
Eat Happy from Eat Happy, pork tenderloin one. It was an Asian pork tenderloin tonight. What'd you think about it?
I thought it was good. I thought it got a little dry.
Yeah, I agree. I think I need to add a little more liquid to it.
Yeah.
Because we put it in the crock pot, and it just basically, so like a tenderloin, you know, you don't usually think about putting in the crock pot because they can.
Well, they're lean.
They're so
there's no
lean.
Fat.
There's no fat. So I had thrown
what about
in
some bacon?
Everything's better with bacon. I had thrown in a little chicken stock with it to try and help the liquids. And I think it needs a little bit more to help keep it moist. So.
Oh, that's the worst word.
I know. Some of you feel hate it. But I thought it was good. I liked the flavors a lot. And I loved how like it just kind of flaked apart and Michaela ate it.
I thought it was really good. And it was great with the wine. So.
Yeah, it was good. The asparagus, not so good with the wine.
The asparagus is not. Asparagus isn't good with most wine. That's a tough one. But it's good for you. And that was really tasty.
Yeah.
So I want to start out before we get into any kind of rewind. I wanted to start out by thanking Rob Bozovich over at Endurance for Everyone. He really helped me understand what to do with editing and spent quite a bit of time with me. So I owe Rob a debt of gratitude.
Me too.
that we were able to finally get through that. And he showed me on whatever that is, GarageBand.
GarageBand, which I thought was like a game.
It's not, no.
No, I had no idea.
You can make beautiful music with GarageBand.
Oh, nice.
And I know a lot of people edit their podcasts with it. I have no idea how because there's like limits to how big it can be. And I have no idea. So, but the concepts that he showed me, I was then able to take kind of the step by step that he showed me and then Google each step with Audacity.
Okay.
And then figure out how to do it. And to this moment, I still need to Google every time I do it. because I don't remember the keystrokes. I don't remember where the...
I thought you're good at remembering that kind of stuff. Like, once you learn something, you're pretty good about remembering it. No?
I am if I want to do it.
Oh.
The editing chore is not my favorite part of podcasting, well, as it turns out. But the opportunity cost of that would be spending money.
Which, no.
Which
we're trying not to do.
Right. I mean, because we have a lot of sunk cost in this. It's an expensive hobby. And then we have the ongoing cost of hosting.
Right.
We're just trying to keep to a minimum. Down. And our awesome patrons help us do that now.
Yes.
Of course. And now that we're not outsourcing the editing, you know, it's super helpful.
Yes.
So we, you know, always thank Linda and Christine and Julie for their huge support.
Do you even
support.
Think they remember that they're still like
you
giving.
Asked that last time and I have no idea. And it's funny because we're going to talk about this. We'll probably talk about it on air eventually, but I need to talk to you off air about my thoughts on it too.
Okay.
I'm becoming uncomfortable with it.
Well, at this point it's just something that shows up and it's such minor dollars. And I think
that's not true. I mean,
well, the one time patronage. Yes. That was significant.
Well, no, I mean, month to month, it all adds up, right. I guess, is the point. Like, it's super generous of anybody. I mean, the fact that anybody wants to give us a nickel.
I know. Yeah.
Is it's is pretty good. Right. Yeah. So it's.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know.
But yeah. So thank you, Rob, for helping.
Huge thank you to Rob.
Helping ease that, because that was getting painful for anyone that was coming near you while you were trying
for
to do it.
And then I forgot to tell you a story.
Oh, boy.
Our friend of the show, David Dushkin.
Okay.
He has a son, and
he doesn't let him listen to the podcast, does he?
He does.
Oh boy.
So, I get this note. I think it was on our wall from him, and it's basically like, "Hey, I think his name is Bray or Braden. Is wondering, you know, like where's the podcast? Like a couple of weeks ago when we were like between
when you're
things.
Trying to edit,
and I said hopefully tomorrow afternoon, and then he tells us that his son, who's like I want to say maybe 10,
okay,
refers to the show as Gretchen, and he said
poor kid,
and so I said David, that's just awesome, and he said Pete, it's hysterical. We went to a lecture, and the opening speaker's name was Gretchen. He elbowed me. In excitement and said, Daddy, it's Gretchen. I had to break it to him that it was the wrong one. He folded his arms and sighed.
Aww.
So now there's two people on the planet that hate when somebody else is named Gretchen.
I hate it when someone else's name, because it's such a unique name. There are not a lot of Gretchens. Like my company.
Maybe in Germany or something.
There are elsewhere. But like here in the States, like there's just not a lot of Gretchens. My company, 16,000 people worldwide. Plenty of people in Germany, not one other Gretchen in the whole company.
Well, you know, I can only, so I'm older, and so growing up watching game shows, there was one called Match Game.
Yes,
and
yes.
So Greedy Gretchen
was
often one of the topics in Match Game.
Yes, yes.
Did you get a lot of Greedy Gretchens?
I got a lot of Greedy Gretchens growing up. Mostly from my brother would call me that.
That's a little bit creepy.
But yes, I got a lot of Greedy Gretchens growing up. Yes.
But I thought you would get a kick out of the fact
that's awesome.
You've got a huge fan.
I'm a fan. Yay.
And
the one that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. But yeah, I agree. When there's another Gretchen, it's kind of weird.
It's pretty strange. Super strange.
Super strange.
All right. Well, let's get into a little bit of the FMC Rewind. And any views from the couch?
Well, I feel like we need to share with our few listeners about our experiment that we're doing.
Oh, yes.
So, for many years, you have been trying to get me to cut cable. Ever since your brother and sister-in-law cut cable, you've been on me like, we need to do this. We'd save all this money, blah, blah, blah. And I have been resistant because of my shows. And you were persistent. And then finally, this past 2 weeks with Comcast has been absolutely horrible. Every time I would go on demand to watch one of my shows, it would just reset itself constantly. I couldn't watch anything.
My assumption is by blowing up Comcast on this hugely popular podcast.
Hugely popular podcast.
We're probably going to get a bunch of free months
or something. Oh, totally. 100%. So I finally caved and you looked online and you looked at Hulu Live and you checked and to make sure that all of my shows were available. And 95% of my shows are available. I'm finding a few more that are not, new ones that are showing up. Mainly my shows on TLC, which are not available. Ones that I was going to try and watch, My 600 Pound Life, not available to me
anymore.
Have
you checked Netflix?
Not on Netflix either.
Okay.
So, because I did. So then my next check is going to check Amazon Prime, see if it's on Amazon. But it's not on Netflix. I haven't found any of my TLC shows on. But
what
I can.
What about just looking online?
I can go online and watch them online, but then I got to watch them on my computer. So I got to figure out how do I get that on the TV?
Because there's a browser right on the. Right on the Fire Stick. Like, there's an
app.
Oh,
like the Safari, the whatever?
Yeah, whatever the browser
Firefox
is. Yeah, you just go to that.
You think so?
Why not?
I don't know. All right, we'll give that a try.
I mean, you can try.
I'll give it a try. So that's
I know, because it's super important, at least to James.
It is, for me to watch 600 Pound Life. And that was, I was ready, because I was talking to Linda today, and I'm like, I'm out of shows. She's like, what about, there's a couple of shows on TLC that I need to, that she wants me to watch. And one is, Lost in Transition. It's about people going through gender transitions.
Oh,
so she's like, you need to watch this show. It's pretty, you know, it's interesting. And so, but I can't because it's, you know, I got to watch it on the show, on the computer. And I can't watch shows while I'm working on my computer. I mean, that's just a little much. So, so that's my latest. But other than that, it's, you know, it's been going well. We got a new Fire Stick. And I think that's been making a big difference as far as like watching live TV and stuff. It takes a little getting used to. But I've been able to watch all my Bravo shows and, you know, all my Housewives and all that stuff, which is good. So, you know, we got a month free to give this a try to see, but I might let you pull the trigger.
Wow.
I
don't know if you've perused the Hulu lineup fully yet.
I looked at, so it's, like I said, it's not that intuitive, but I did look and I tried to look for TLC and it's not there. And then I tried to Google, like search for the names of the shows and it wasn't there.
Right. No, I'm going a different direction.
Okay.
With that.
Okay.
There there's a show that I think only aired maybe a year.
Okay.
Called The Hot Wives. So there's The Hot Wives of Orlando.
Oh my God.
And it looks like there might be another one. Maybe Hot Wives of Las Vegas or something.
Oh my gosh.
So Hulu's Hot Wives cured my Real Housewives obsession is one of the headlines of.
So meaning like you wouldn't, well, no, but I get my Real Housewives, so that's okay. But I'm missing my, you know, 600 Pound Life, Lost in Transition, and then this other like absolute train wreck of a show that Vanessa watches, 90 Day Fiance, After Ever After, which is like, so these are people that try to come to the U.S. on 90 Day Visa, Fiance Visas. And they follow these different couples through the 90 days. And then now they have. After the fact. So like after the 90 days are up, what's going on in their lives and stuff like that. And it's a train wreck watching some of these people like this.
I can't even imagine.
I mean, it's just like, and the way people they treat each other is just, it just amazes me. So.
Well, it sounds like this Hot Wives show didn't last long and it was also a train wreck. So it sounds right up your alley.
So it sounds perfect. I'll have to give it a try. Linda has Hulu too, so she'll have to check it out.
Well,
but
I'd be surprised if she hasn't, if she's had it for a while.
I don't know. Well, she's like, she tells us that we have to watch The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, that's definitely on those. And there's a couple of Hulu originals that I'm looking forward to.
But we have to
watch
it. We can't watch it while we're working, so that's one I think we
need
to.
That's really difficult for me.
I know, you can't just sit there and watch TV.
No,
you're
tough.
Always
so I don't like movies too
much. It's kind of like annoying a little bit when you're when you're on the
phone.
It
annoys you, it annoys the crap out of me.
So but yeah, so it's been going well, and I've been going on the treadmill. There is a season 4 of Grace and Frankie. And so I'm on season 4 of that, but I think that is the last one until they release new ones. So, but they do like.
There's plenty of shows on Netflix that you're going to love.
Yeah, no, so. I'm looking forward to more shows, but yeah, so I've been doing that.
I mean, I can give you suggestions on that because I've watched a lot more of that in the background over the years.
Yeah, so.
Nice.
But yeah. So
well, I mean, and yeah, you've kept moving, overall.
I've been
so
doing, added
good.
The weights, my little 2-pound weights. Do you see the definition yet?
I do. It's It's striking. mammogram issues over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I went for my very first mammogram this morning. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's horrible. Like, we have one friend that actually passed out while she was getting one done. So, but my lady over at Advocate Hospital was very good, very gentle, and it wasn't so bad, but I am still feeling the after effects of it. So, and you know me, I bruise easily. So, like, I'm expecting them to just be totally black and blue for the next 2 weeks.
Extra wine.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so yeah. So it's going, I'm moving nice. Along, and I might try to increase the time a little bit, but I don't know how to do that because usually by.
Why don't you just increase the speed slightly?
Yeah, but I feel like I need to get a little more time going. Okay. I need to, if we're ever going to get on an epic hike, I need to be able to walk more than 30 minutes.
That's true.
So,
well, you can always go back on it at lunch for a little while.
Yeah, and now that my work is starting to calm down a little bit, usually the summer months are pretty calm for me until we get to August when we do another quarter end.
If we can get the kid in the stroller, we can go for nighttime walks too.
Yeah, which she wants to go, but she wants to walk.
Yeah, she wants to walk.
Maybe we can do the
well, really, she thinks we're going to the park every time.
Right. So. But maybe we do the wagon. That'll be something new for her. She might. But anyway, so yeah, so I want to try and see if I can try to get at least another 15 minutes on there, just to try and get up to 45. But usually by 8 o'clock my phone's starting to blow up.
Well, we can talk about adjustments to the routine and figure it out. We'll figure it out.
So, but yeah.
Nice.
How about you? How's your training going?
It's coming better. I'm doing better overall. I think I'm better mentally. I mean, I need to drop some weight in order to really feel like I'm getting better again, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Overall, I'm doing well. I was going to do a race tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which is, by the time this releases, is going to be probably today.
Yeah.
Hopefully I get it out by then. This is Friday night. So on Saturday, I was supposed to do a race. And the forecast is thunderstorms with lightning.
Yeah.
So that's a no-go.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even going to risk that. I got to drive quite... For whatever reason, there's no 5Ks near, like, right by us.
Yeah.
Except for during the week.
Really?
Yes. And... It's just odd.
There's 5Ks during the week?
A lot of them.
Wow.
A lot of them. And then a lot of them also are just kind of later in the summer.
Yeah.
So normally you can't, I mean, you know, you walk out the door, oh, geez, there's a 5K during this time of year. But for whatever reason, I'm just hitting a strange scheduling of it. So that's not that big of a deal to me because I don't feel like I'm quite right where I want to be to hit this goal.
Because you want to do a sub 30.
I do, yeah. And, you know, so I'll just do my long run. I'll figure out when or how I'll get the long run in tomorrow, which will be 10 miles, okay, give or take. So, but my speed has been better. My stamina has been better again.
You're adapting to the heat pretty better?
I think I'm just sucking it up better. I think mentally I was just in a bad spot, okay, as much as anything. But like, I did a 4x400, was that yesterday?
Yeah.
Mile warm up, mile cool down, 4x400 in the middle with equal rest. And so that means running 400 meters at a much, so my easy pace is like 12 and a half minutes. And my 400 meter pace is like a 9:03.
Okay.
So that's a significant difference, right? I mean, I'm to me, it feels like I'm sprinting.
Yeah.
I feel like Usain Bolt. Just shorter, fatter, slower. but for me, that's a big deal. And I was able to get pretty close to that this time. So, and it was hot.
Yeah.
I was dripping.
Yeah, it was hot yesterday.
So it was tough. Today, I wasn't able to get my run in just because of the way the schedule all fell.
Well, you tried to go this morning, then it was lightning.
It was lightning.
We have some pretty crazy weather over the next couple days.
Right. And then I had stuff, and it just didn't happen. It was an optional run, so it's not like I'm skipping a scheduled run. It was the ones on Friday are optional, but I want to do them.
Right.
And what I can't do is what I did today, which is basically I could have gotten on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And I just didn't do it. So I need to get better about that. If I can't go out, I need to get on the treadmill. I need to work more on strength and stretching and stuff. So, you know, but it's better than it was.
Yes.
By far.
That's good.
And you know, not doing this race is not heartbreaking for me. It's not that big a deal.
There's no medal anyway, so.
I don't know if there is or not. I doubt it. These 5Ks, a lot of them are not doing a medal.
Yeah.
But we've got the one in Toronto.
Yes, and I got my books
you
today.
You got your Toronto books.
I got my Toronto books, so I'm ready to start planning our visit because, yeah. You know, we have to, with the kids, we kind of have to know what we're doing. We can't just fly by the seat of our pants. Right. It doesn't work out that well.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so overall, that's pretty good, and that's really the updates that I've got.
Yeah.
Now, from a food perspective, though, we did talk tonight with Peter Belarchik,
yes,
our past guest, and he had offered us a free consultation, and we went through that, and it was interesting because, you know, his approach is very, very similar to what we've been doing. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're far off at all.
No.
But he wants us to do some things we're not comfortable with, like tracking food.
It's not that we're not comfortable with it. We just don't want to do it.
Well, that's one definition of discomfort, not wanting to do it. Weighing in
but
daily.
We will. Well, right. I do weigh. I'm for the most part, I do weigh in. Yeah. I do weigh myself every morning.
Yeah, I've got a love-hate relationship with the scale. So it just, you know, I'll do it.
It kind of keeps me in check. Just like what he was saying, it kind of just keeps me in check because then, like, if I'm up a couple pounds or a pound, then I might, like, cut back on what I'm eating or, you know, how much I'm eating and stuff, and then it'll bring it back down the next day. Or I'll increase my water intake because a lot of times if I don't drink, I'll notice that I gain, like, a pound or two if I'm not drinking enough water.
Right.
Which the other day I did not drink enough water. So this morning I was up, and I was like, and it wasn't from anything I ate because I ate perfect. And so it was just because I didn't drink enough water. So tomorrow I've been drinking, like, ton of water today, so
yeah. So it was an interesting consult, and
yeah,
I think for somebody that's entering the lifestyle, he would be really, really good.
Yeah, for sure.
I know, like, he's got a bunch of expertise, like when people are stalled,
mm-hmm.
and I think that would be interesting too. But we don't really fall into either of those categories.
I feel like we might be a little bit stalled because...
Oh, I just haven't been paying attention.
See, and but I have been, right? So I have been paying attention, and I have been stalled. So I'm going to take a lot what he said. We're going to do what he asks.
Well, there's no other way to know.
Right, and to see if it gives a little jump start back to losing these extra weights and stuff, so...
Yeah, and I think it would be interesting to do as an experiment either way, right?
Exactly.
You know, the exercise portion is the interesting part, right? Because you're kind of doing what
he wants.
What he wants, right?
I am like the model child here.
Right. in terms of where your heart rate ends up, and I'm not.
Right.
And my heart rate just kind of runs higher, and we talked about supplements and how that could affect it, and, you know, stuff that I don't really think about, and, you know, I have to get by my disbelief in some of it. Like, I just have a visceral reaction to things like supplements, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to take them.
Right.
I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, we've lived a long time without supplements on this earth. How did that happen?
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, going to take some of the advice, most of the advice. Some of it, I think, is individual always. Yeah. And, you know, you just tweak.
Mm-hmm.
It could go exactly how you want. And if it doesn't, then you tweak.
Exactly.
So, but it was we're super appreciative of his time. And I thought it was really nice of him do that. So
it was great.
Very good. Well, we're going to now get over to an interview that I did last night
with
Susan Hurd, who is a fellow member of the Sub 30 Club. And the interview is, I hope everybody listens to this and then passes it on.
Yeah.
Because Susan is an amazing woman. The intro will give you a little bit, but I really concentrated in the interview on letting her talk about her journey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you'll hear it coming up next. So we'll head on over to the interview. All right, now we're heading over to an interview with Susan Hurd. Susan is a mother of two and one of the toughest athletes that I've gotten to know through that thing called the internet. She's a fellow member of the Sub 30 Club. And when you get to hear her story, you're going to understand how tragedy can strike somebody and then what it means to really come back from that and to honor that person's legacy. So I can't wait for this interview, and I think you guys are all going to enjoy it. Susan, welcome to the Fat Man Chronicles.
I'm so excited to be here. I can't even tell you.
Awesome. Awesome. So before we get to all that stuff that kind of struck you and your family, I want to know about little Susan. I want to know about how it was growing up. You know, how was life growing up for you?
Oh my gosh. I had a charmed existence growing up. Very lucky, two great parents. We had a lot of fun. My dad had some chickens. We had a garden. I was always the proverbial fat kid. I love food. We cooked a lot at home. Unfortunate genetics, you know, not the most athletic styled human being. But life was good. I had a lot of friends. I loved to read, swim. I was active. I liked school a lot, which maybe that's dorky to say now, but I did like it back then too. I probably was a dork. But, you know, life was good and college was good. And I met my husband when I was an undergrad, and we bought a house after grad school. We got married, we had the kids, and it's been a beautiful life, really.
Awesome. So you said that you were active, but didn't feel like you had like an athlete's body.
Not at all. Had big boobs from the get-go, you know, puberty and all that. Was short, so weight was always a challenge. But I did swim team, you know, as a young person, probably through middle school. Did a little bit as a freshman in high school. Sports were not as competitive as, like they are now. So you did get to do like the JV and that sort of thing. But I was never, I really wasn't into sports. I mean, I like to ride my bike. I like to swim recreationally. We would go like rafting on the Delaware River, things like that, that just kept you busy and outside, but not like basketball or field hockey or lacrosse or any of those things.
Did you consider yourself athletic or an athlete?
You know what? My family put a lot of emphasis on intellect. So the praise that I received always from my parents was about how well I did in school, or, you know, the fact that I wanted to go to the library and get another book. So the emphasis in our house was really not about fitness. I think, you know, I'm middle-aged, so the sports life was not a thing. Like now, I know a lot of parents are out with their kids all the time on soccer fields and whatnot. You know, we kind of just were at our house, and we did that. We would go out. Actually, my dad and I would bike after dinner. We'd go out for a bike ride. But it wasn't an athletic event. It was just to enjoy nature and be outside. So I didn't identify with being an athlete at all, not even in the least. Never.
I think that you bring up something that's interesting, because I think we often talk about athleticism and being athletic and activity we see differently, right? That bike ride after dinner was more of an activity. Like, it's just something you kind of did. And it was a time probably that was, I mean, I'm going to just assume that it was kind of special, right? If it's you and your dad and you get to talk and know each other even better. Yep. But we didn't see it as athletic. Whereas I think now people would say, hey, you're an athlete. Like, you're riding that bike. You're an athlete.
Yes. Yes. And I think one of the funniest things for me as a triathlete, so I ride my bike competitively now. The hardest adjustment for me with that was really getting my head out of like biking isn't just a casual, like, we roll along and we look at the cows and we stop for an ice cream. It's like, oh my gosh, we have to like actually focus on our watts and the power and all that. And so it's fun talking to my dad, who's still, he's 76 and he still bikes. And we love to bike together, but I'm looking at my computer and he's kind of like rolling along, just enjoying. So that's different mindset.
That's fantastic. And then you mentioned food. So that you love food from the get-go.
Yes.
So what were those early meals like? Did you guys cook a lot at home? And
totally. We always cooked at home and we ate. So my dad, we tease him now because we just did that MyHeritage business and found out we're not really Italian.
oh no. What are you?
I know. I'm not even going to get into that. That's a whole nother podcast of its own.
Wow.
But we identify with being, he grew up in an Italian household, and we cook everything basically, and literally we had chickens, so we had our own eggs. We had a garden, so I never had tomato sauce out of a jar until I went to college. And I remember calling my parents and saying, I don't know what they served us. They said it was spaghetti, but that was not spaghetti. So, you know, we did a lot of traditional recipes, and my dad was curious about food and cooking. But my mom had more of the day to day, you know, the Monday through Friday, got to get some dinner on the table. So I was always in charge of making the salad, stirring, you know, the sauce or whatever was going to go on, whatever she was making. You know, she cooked more of a sort of a neutral palate, I'll say. But always interesting things, you know, that other people didn't have. And we never had a casserole. I didn't know what a tuna casserole was. But there was always good food and lots of it.
That's, yeah, Gretchen's family, I think, made tuna casserole a lot. Not a ton in our family, but it's so funny to hear you talk about chickens because my older kids who live downstate with their mom, they have chickens. And so, and my daughter's really into them. And, yeah. You know, it's like not a life that we would have led here in the city, which is pretty funny. And I'm with you on the jarred sauce. There are times that there's jarred sauce in the house here now, and I'm like, what is this? Like, what happened?
That, I know.
Let's just make some gravy. Don't torture the kids with ragu. I mean, you don't want to do that. It's terrible.
Exactly. It is. No, it's terrible. It is. And even now, if I do make sauce out of a jar, which, God, I don't even ever tell my father that, but I always have to put meat in it because you have to at least cook the meat in the sauce. Otherwise, it really does taste terrible. And really, anything can be made with garlic and olive oil. I mean, that's my basic. When people ask, what do I cook? I don't even follow a recipe. I just know if I have garlic, olive oil, maybe some oregano, parsley. I can do anything with a good lemon, too. So
that's awesome. And so what's your weakness when it comes to the food?
My problem with food, honest to God, I just love sweet things. Cookies, cakes, pies, ice cream, you name it, candy. I love it. I love it all. And portions, you know, I never knew. So growing up, my father ate three meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And every meal was a large, hearty meal. But he ate three meals, that was it. You know, and the portions were never discussed. There was just always food. And so we always ate it. And I think portion sizes, I never understood until my first Weight Watchers meeting 1,000 years ago at some first ditch effort to lose weight. I remember when they said what 3 ounces of chicken breast looked like, a deck of cards, I think was the analogy. Yeah, yeah. And I just was like, huh, well, isn't that fascinating? I must have eaten 9 ounces of chicken at a time. I mean, you know, and rice, they would say like a half a cup of rice and showed us. And I'm like, a half a cup of rice, you'll starve to death. I mean, truly, it blew my mind. Like portions, I had no concept, not even a little bit.
Well, so, I don't think you're alone on that. I mean, we would just pile on whatever was there.
I know, but it's terrifying. Like cereal out of a box. So I do one of my favorite little snacks now that I try not to eat too much of the junk is, you know, bad for your cereal. But if you look at if you actually measure out a serving of say Reese's peanut butter cup cereal that I happen to love.
All right, because you know I was going to ask, what are these cereals?
Seriously. And like Lucky Charms, I mean, I'm embarrassed as an adult to say, like, I still love Lucky Charms. Bring it on. Fruit Loops, love them.
Oh, there's Fruit Loops in the house right now. They're torturing me.
Delicious. But you measure out how much is a serving?
A cup of that stuff is nothing.
That's a lie. It's nonsense. And you know, my daughter actually went to have a yogurt the other day. And she likes the ones with the crunchy toppings. Yep. So she's into the Greek. I think it's Light and Fit or something. So she's been recording. She's been trying to do, you know, watch her things. Because I've been trying to be educational in a, I hope, a positive way about portion sizes, quite frankly. And so she's been recording on her Fitbit. So she said to me, we were sitting here. She's eating her yogurt. And she looked at the thing again. And she goes, Mom, the calorie count doesn't include the topping.
Right.
I had that in a separate thing. And she was like, how is this fair? And we were both horrified. And I thought, you know, this is why life is so hard for people like us, because you don't know what a serving looks like. Then you go and think you're doing something good, but really you're not. And it's so confusing. I find food labels and portions, and maybe my eyes are big. I don't know. But to me, a portion is not what they say a portion is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that you can err a lot of times with proteins and be okay. I mean, if you ate 6 ounces of chicken, I don't think that's the end of the world, or even 9 ounces of chicken. The problem is when you eat 3 cups of that cereal, and now you've eaten like, that's like the equivalent of 2 bags of M&Ms, you know, that's where it gets really, really rough. But You know, and it's, I'm not a lucky, I am a Fruit Loops guy. I love Fruity Pebbles too. And, but I'm not, I've never been a Lucky Charms guy.
Those and weird marshmallows are fascinating to me. Love them.
I know. And my kids do too. And I think Gretchen does too, but I've just, I never got into them. Didn't they make, I know one of your big symbols in life is the unicorn. Didn't they make unicorns in that Lucky Charms cereal?
Oh, they sure did. And I sure do have a few boxes of those possibly in my house currently.
Well, I imagine, I mean, it's pretty, a pretty well-known thing for you. You probably get people sending that stuff over to you. I saw them actually, I think in Costco, there was a giant box of them.
Well, don't buy your cereal in Costco because, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster. Anything in that size other than toilet paper and tissues, I wouldn't buy it there.
That's awesome. All right. So we'll transition a little bit. So two kids and about, well, what is it? It's just over 7 years now, right?
It has. Yep.
So kind of walk us through a little bit of, you know, kind of like what life was like, just like a little pre-diagnosis for your son, David, and then kind of what happened as that all unfolded.
Sure. So again, I mean, my life has been just truly so many gifts and wonderful things have happened in my life. I'm incredibly lucky on so many different levels. And, you know, Tom and I got married, decided to have children. We were very lucky. You know, we had David, he was born, beautiful birth, great kid, easy baby, you know, he was your typical brainiac little kid. He loved to read. He loved to dance. And then we had our daughter Daisy and, you know, it was like fun. It was like life with babies, toddlers. It was a freak show around here. The toys were everywhere. You know, we did it all, the soccer classes, they went to daycare. Tons of friends. We would have friends, you know, lots of friends with kids at the same time. And we had parties every Friday over here because, you know, we didn't want to have a babysitter. So bring your kids, bring a bottle of wine, have a good time. You know, and we were lucky and just had wonderful times at our community pool, our little local school here. I mean, things were great. And when David was going into third grade and Daisy was going into first grade, their school went under construction. So for the first time, they were going to take a bus to school, which was like, woohoo, we're taking the bus, because you didn't do that till middle school. Very exciting. And I got a call that David had gotten sick at school. And so I went to pick him up. And, you know, it was one of those kids get sick. He took a nap. He woke up. He was better. Fine. And it was funny because I was noticing he wasn't eating his lunch. And David was always... I'll back up. So his birthday's in May and he was always on those charts, those BMI charts. He was always off the chart with his BMI, which as a mom who's always been overweight, I was very concerned about. I felt guilty. I felt responsible. It concerned me. I thought I was doing a good job, like feeding them. So that year for his checkup, he was a normal BMI. And I was so pleased with myself because I'd been really working on that and thinking about his nutrition and making sure I was feeding him properly and whatnot. So fantastic. And he'd had a couple episodes of vomiting in the summer. Again, he's a kid. Things happen. Don't think about it. Then his lunch started coming home. He wouldn't be eating. He would fall asleep after school. And this is a kid who would like read for hours, play his music and dance. And just things seemed wrong. Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what it was, but he woke up then once in the middle of the night screaming in pain that his abdomen was hurting. We went to the emergency room. They said, oh, he has gas. And this was months of trying to figure out what was happening. And finally, I said to the pediatrician, I'm not leaving until I can have some kind of test to see inside of him. And she's like, you're going to expose him to radiation. He's just a young child. And I said, there's something wrong. I don't know what it is. I do not know what it is. Finally, she said we could have an ultrasound. So I took him over to the hospital and I had the wherewithal to ask my neighbor to come. And I don't even know why I did that, but I just thought I should have somebody with me. And they put the wand on his belly, the technician. She immediately said, I'll be right back, walked out, came back with a whole crew of people. And I kind of sat down and I thought, oh, something is wrong. But I'm trying to tell David, like, oh, I never saw inside your belly before, you know, trying to make him at ease about it. And then they took me outside and they said, you know, he has neuroblastoma and he's probably going to die and you're going to go to Philadelphia to the hospital tomorrow. I'll make the arrangements. And all this was happening. There was an ultrasound and then there was a CAT scan at our local hospital. And I called Tom before the CAT scan. And it was a very traumatic process to get to the diagnosis. And we started treatment then. He was diagnosed with neuroblastoma, which is a type of pediatric cancer. It's usually seen in babies under one. And it's a solid tumor above the kidney, typically is where it presents. So we went through his treatment, a lot of chemotherapy, a lot of surgeries and things of that sort. And, you know, early on, David said to me, we're going to embrace life. We never talked about him dying. We never talked about that was even a possibility, but he was aware. He was very smart. He was very sensitive. I mean, he almost could feel things and sense what was happening without even needing words. And he and I were very close. So he knew when things were not good and when they were good. And we celebrated anytime there was a reason to celebrate, we made it a celebration. He loved candy cigarettes. This is so bad. I know, terrible. But he loved candy cigarettes. And by this time, he was now into like rap music. And he was just a gamer. I mean, it's hard to have a kid in enrichment reading like very large books in second, third, fourth grade, and then like coming home and putting on Kesha and like, you know, jamming in his room that he turned into a DJ booth. He was a dichotomy of all sorts of things. He was a Renaissance man. So you know, we went through this whole thing and it was truly, looking back, actually, I kept a blog during that time, and looking back at it now, we were in the middle of hell, quite honestly, but I don't think we noticed it at the time because we just took every minute and every day was a celebration. If we all woke up and, you know, he wanted to go to the beach or we were going to plan a vacation or what, we just did anything and everything. We built a lifetime of memories in basically, you know, a little over 2 years that he was in treatment. And then once he relapsed, there's no known cure once you relapse from neuroblastoma. So once that happened, you know, we lived it up. We had a really wonderful support group around us. Lot of love, so much, so many gifts came from that time. But unfortunately, he passed away February 10th of 2011. He was in fifth grade. They used to cheer when he came to school. It was very funny. The kids would all just be like, "David's here!" And there was a big cheer. And he would be graduating high school on Monday. He would be graduating Easton Area High School. So he died. And it was tough. I mean, it's impossible to figure out how to move forward. It's, you just don't know what to do and how to make sense of what's happening. And I remember at the first anniversary after he died, Tom and I both spoke at his service. And at the first anniversary, I said, "We've only started to taste the pain of this journey of grief." And I think it was probably about 5 years into it, I would say, that I started to realize myself that David loved the term embrace life. And we have bracelets that said that. And I would say, "Oh, embrace life." I would tell everybody, "Embrace life, do every," you know. And I realized I was not doing that. I was telling people to, I was saying that I was, but I wasn't getting off my couch. I would sit there and binge eat all night long. I mean, a whole box of Oreos, a bottle of wine, you know, whatever. I just was so numb and I was suffering. I was just suffering. And I remember it was New Year's Eve, 2015. We were at home instead of going out for New Year's Eve. And I just remember sitting on the couch and thinking to myself, "Are you going to choose to live and be alive? Or are you going to just not exist anymore?" And I don't ever think I thought to myself, I was saying, like, basically I was thinking of killing myself. I don't know that I was ever really there. but it was like this conversation in my mind of like, you've got to get up. Like, David would not want us to sit here and be sad and crying, not even crying. I don't even know that I cried after a while. But just to be so not engaged in the world, like not doing the things. I mean, we used to go down to our farmer's market, you know, go pet the goats, go into New York City because he loved the city. Like, we did, you know, we did things, and we became a family that didn't do anything. And I remember that New Year's Eve thinking, you got to make a decision. And one of the things that bugged me was, you know, my weight had obviously gotten worse than it had ever been, and my fitness was non-existent. And I thought, you know, maybe I need to start going to the gym. So in 2015, that January 1st, we went and joined our LA Fitness, and we started going to the gym. And I remember being on the elliptical for 10 minutes and being like, oh my gosh, this is just, woo, this is hard work, man. This is tough. I was almost 300 pounds. I put my Fitbit on because I was going to try to get, I'm like, 10,000 steps. That's easy, right? That was, you know, at the time Fitbits were really big. And that first day, I'll never forget it. I remember looking at the watch at the end of the day, and I'd done like 2,000 steps, maybe. So that was a wake up call. So, but I said, you know what? I just have to just, we're getting started. We're going to start. And so I used the Fitbit program. You know, they have the app, and I tracked my food, tracked my steps, did whatever. I would go to do the elliptical. And one of my husband's cousins is an ultra marathoner. So he said, I'm on a run 100 miles from my house in New Jersey, finish with the Runner's World Festival in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and it would be 100 miles, the whole thing. And he's like, so would you guys be willing to drive a support car with, you know, supplies through the dark, very quiet parts of New Jersey in the middle of the night? And we said, yeah, that'd be cool. Let's do that. So we did. And I looked at John running. And sometimes, I mean, he was so tired by then. He'd run over 70 miles. And they did this in 24 hours. So he was tired. So then a song would come on by Katy Perry. David loved Firework by Katy Perry. So I would get out of the car and run alongside of him, if you call it running, whatever. He wasn't really running at that point, and I didn't run, so it was a good match for us. You know, so we cheered them right into Bethlehem. We had a little tailgate, and then I went over to the finish line, and I'm waiting there, and I see all these people in these sub 30 shirt, this whole big crew of people screaming and yelling and cheering and having an incredible time. And I'm looking at them, and I'm like, gosh, they look like fun people. I didn't know running was actually fun. This is interesting. So I'm observing these people. And then I saw a woman who had on a gold ribbon pin with her sub 30 shirt. And finally, I said to my other cousin, I said, Pam, I've got to go ask them what this is. So I go over, and I met Jody, who the first thing I said to her is, I'm like, you're wearing a gold ribbon pin for pediatric cancer? And she said, yes, my son had neuroblastoma. Now, knowing what I knew, I was very cautious because you never know how it's going to turn out. And I said, how is he? And she said, he's a survivor. And I'm sure I got teary-eyed at that point. And she sort of was like, well, how do you know, like, about this? So, of course, as moms, we wound up chatting. And finally, I was like, now tell me about this sub 30. What is this thing? They all had shirts, pink shirts that said sub 30. So she said, oh, it's our running club. It's online, and it's super great, super motivating. I'm going to add you to the club. And I was like, well, but I don't run. Like, you don't have, that's nice, but that's not my thing. She's like, I'm adding you. So I'm slightly extroverted and over talk all the time. And whatever, she adds me to the group. So I start to look around, and I thought, I wonder if I could run. I've never run in my life, never. And it just struck me as like, I wonder if this is possible. I like these people. Like, I love the energy of our sub 30 group. And it was so motivating. The EMC posts, you know, all those guys getting up early in the morning, which is what I do. And I thought, gosh, well, maybe I could. So I put Couch to 5K on my phone, and that's how I started. And then I did the 5K. We did it as a family, the Peeps 5K in Bethlehem. And I was like, I kind of want to do more. So 5K turned to 10K. I did the Super Bowl 10K, met a few of our other sub 30 friends. And all of this was to work up. I wanted to do the half marathon at Runner's World in 2016. That's really what I wanted to do. And that was really it. No other aspirations. Time goal was 3 hours. Well, there's a group of ladies here in the Lehigh Valley. We call ourselves the Hatch Mob because we run in a fish hatchery. And they were the most incredible, supportive, fabulous humans you could ever imagine. Some of them have major running chops, excellent abilities. Some are more recreational runners, but everybody's welcome, everybody's pace, and we all got together and we would run. And I don't know, I just sort of fell in love with the whole sport. And I ran the half marathon in 2016, and then I wasn't done. There was more. And that's kind of how I got started in running. Quite frankly, I got swooped in by the community as a non-runner and then said, I'm going to do this too. And it's been great.
That's awesome. You know, I've got like 800 questions. I'm going to try not to bombard you too much. And if I ask anything that is too much, you just let me know, because okay. I'm just a curious kind of dude. So, in the beginning of that journey, with David, and I mean, he sounds like a kid who was just wise beyond his years, right? I mean, I'm not sure that I could have that outlook in terms of being sick and going through what had to be just hell, you know, on his own body. Right. Yeah. And him talking about embracing life. And I mean, it's just incredible. Did his attitude help you? I don't know how to phrase this, but I almost want to say like postpone panic or grief, like whatever was going to happen. Like what happens in your head as this is going on and your kid's like a rock star?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, everybody says to you, you're so strong, you're amazing. And I'm like, nope, I'm his mom. And this is what he needs now. So I was very much compartmentalized during this time. I did what needed to be done. So whatever would make it easier for him, that's how we lived. He wanted Capri Suns, Goldfish, and Oreos. We always had them. And if you came to visit, that's what you brought. I tried to keep it easy for him and let him just focus on his body and what needed to happen. And like, you know, nausea. People with cancer oftentimes say they're nauseous. I've said I'm nauseous. I was nauseous at my marathon, but I did not nausea that he experienced. He literally would have to lay completely silent and still for hours. He just needed it to be absolutely quiet. And so I managed that for him. Like it was my job to manage him so that he could heal and get better and focus on what he needed to do, or to be the distraction, you know, because sometimes everybody wants, how are you with the, and he used to call them sad eyes. How are you? Oh, he hated that. He hated when people asked that. And I would oftentimes keep that away from him. But there was no time to panic. I mean, really, it was more just, it was like a soldier during war. We have to get through this. Like we just had to keep going. And I think I didn't acknowledge that I even had any feelings about any of it during the time that it was happening. I think I was just numb from the get-go. I couldn't believe it. I mean, there's still moments in my life when I'm like, did that actually happen to us? Like reading my journal, I just shake my head and I wonder, how the heck did we make this happy for everybody? Like, even at his service, it was like I was just welcoming people to a party. Oh, thank you so much for coming. We're so glad you could be here. And I remember my mother saying to me, what are you doing? Like other funerals, like, you know, you go to, the grieving family is sitting down in the front, kind of crying into their tissues and not really making contact, as you know. And I just was like comforting everybody. And my husband was, it's just how we did things. I don't know. I don't know how we did it. It was important to David not to be seen as a victim or to be identified because he had cancer. That's not what he wanted to be known as. And so I didn't want people to look at us as that sad family. I mean, in hindsight, of course they did. But we didn't want to be pitied and we didn't want to be different. And we just wanted to just be a family, just be who we were. So after he died and all that got stripped away, it took me a while to even recognize, like, well, that we were still here, and that we were gonna, that we were still a family, even though this huge piece of our family was now gone. And I don't know how we did it. I don't remember a lot of that time. Daisy says some things sometimes that just break my heart, because she'll say things like, the reason I don't read as well as David is because when I should have been learning to read, we were mostly in the hospital.
Ooh.
And, you know, it just, it crushes you. And we'll get into it, but I was hit by a car recently and I had to stay one night in the hospital. And she was terrified to leave me alone. She said, you never left David. We shouldn't leave you here by yourself. And that probably hurt me worse than being hit by a car. It crushed me because the impact of the loss is just, it's every day. It's not in big things, but it's like tiny things. Her first day in high school, she should have had her big brother because he was the extrovert. He would have greased the wheels. She would have been the star, you know. And she didn't have that. You know, it's constantly losing. She's, you know, she's alone. She's like, it's early on when she was younger, she would say, I just miss fighting with David. Like, you know, like siblings fight. That's what they do. And she missed that. And the house is too, she'll say the house is too quiet. He filled up a lot of space and it's impossible to fill that space. So I think that's, the tragedies are everyday things. Things like my husband loves his kayaks, and David loved to kayak. And the fact that they can't do that, you know, that that's not something, like I said, me going out on my bike with my dad after dinner.
Right.
I could picture he and David popping down to the river for a quick paddle, coming back in the dark, you know, me yelling because now everything's a mess and they're late. But like, imagine, like that, that's what he deserved as a dad. And, you know, every holiday is hard because there's always that extra piece. But we've learned over the years ways to incorporate David in our life that keeps it joyful, because you just can't be sad all the time. You know, you just can't be in that broken place. So you find ways to create so much joy. And like when I run, the reason I love to run and be outside, I see him all the time. A fox comes across the path and I'm like, hey, David. My dad and I laughed. We were in Maine last summer riding our bikes and we always get lost. We're both directionally challenged. We shouldn't be left alone. So we're sitting there with our heads together, our helmets are close, and we're looking at a map, and a bird almost like flew into us. And my father was the one who looks up. He goes, hi, David. And I just burst out laughing because, you know, it's funny. And we, and now that it's not quite so painful, and it's painful for a long, long time, it's still painful, but it's, but the beautiful things, the memories of the things that you can then share and laugh about, reminisce about. I mean, we tease Daisy all the time about how, like, David didn't want to touch her when she was a baby because I would always make him wash his hands because I was a weird mom like that. And so he would put a pot holder, like a mitt on his hand or like a glove, and he'd pat her on the head. And stuff like that, that you remind your kids about. And maybe, and I don't know what it's like to raise two children successfully. So like maybe you would share those stories in your family, no matter, you know, the lore of those funny stories. But for us, it's something that we do consciously to help Daisy remember, and to remind us of like his favorite meal was filet mignon, mashed potatoes, and Brussels sprouts.
Kids got, yeah, I'm with him.
Right?
That sounds great.
Absolutely. He also liked a pina colada. You know, so Daisy and I, and he loved the Bahamas. So like Daisy and I went to the Bahamas last summer together, a little girl's trip. And, you know, we talked a lot about how much he loved the beach. And, you know, we just try to keep him in our everyday conversation. Not like he's here, but it's weird now because she's getting so, like, she's going to drive. She's getting her first car on Friday. And we're kind of entering this fun stage. And a lot of my friends are like, oh, it's so terrifying. Like the kids are going to be driving and, you know, it's scary. And here's me. I'm like, oh my God, she's going to get to drive. She's going to get to drive a car. What a gift. What an amazing milestone, right? So the way I look at the world is so different because of what happened that I can't panic about life anymore. Like the things that we get ourselves wound up about, and believe me, I'm a type A freaker, planner, scheduler. But when you go through something like what we dealt with, it just, time changed. I still need to be on time, usually. I like to be on time. I like to be prepared. But like my need or my husband's need to like, you know, climb the career ladder, it has like zero interest at all. I changed jobs because I needed to do something that was meaningful to the mission of David's life. He has stayed a school teacher as opposed to getting into administration because he just loves being with the kids. And you realize that having time together as a family is the most important thing. Finding time to do the things you love, being flexible, which we were, I'm very rigid. I was very rigid, but with running, you know, like you change how you do things. I inconvenience my family all the time with my crazy running schedule. You know, when it's hot, you want to go out early, then I'm too tired. You know, it's just, it's amazing how accepting my family is of what I do because they know that this is how I process and this is what makes me happy. And so, and my husband decided he was going to start a kayak business because he loves his kayak. So he'll be a school teacher. And then in the summer, he's going to run his kayak business. And I think you allow for more space in your relationships with people and a little bit more grace. I give a lot of grace to people. Life is hard.
Definitely. I mean, that's super, you know, insightful and touching because my next question, and then you addressed it, was going to be asking about Daisy and how she handled it. I mean, because your worldview is different, but thinking about a child and now the way her worldview has to be, I think it could be, it sounds like she's embracing it so that it can be an advantage because having gone through what she did, my guess is that she might have a little bit different outlook than a lot of her friends do at the same age. And what's important and what's not important, like you were saying, right? Yeah. Life is tough. Yeah. And so you have to embrace every moment. And it's just a very interesting thing. It sounds like she's an incredibly special child too.
Well, watching her,
or young lady, I better not call her a child. She's going to drive a car in a few days.
I know, it's terrifying for all of us. Terrifying in a good way. We were actually just talking today about something that had gone, school's over, just finished. So today was today the first day of summer vacation? I think so. It's Thursday. Yeah. So she finished up yesterday and we were just talking and she brought it up. She said, you know, Mom, she's like, I just don't get involved in drama. She's like, I just like to get stuff done and be effective and move on. And I like people who just like to do that. Because she's not, you know, she's not the most popular kid. She missed out here. Sports and music are huge. She missed when she should have been on those little teams to get ready for the big leagues. I didn't have the wherewithal to take her to a lesson or something. So she was cheated of a lot. And we actually have talked about that. We've done a lot of, there's a great bereavement camp that we go to. We've taken the time to do some counseling as a family and talk about like how you move forward, what was lost, what hurt you, you know, and kind of recognizing we can't change what happened. We can only figure out how to move forward. And I am so proud of that girl. She is just, she's moving forward. You know, she's making her way and it's not been easy. Last year was particularly a difficult transition into high school, but you know, she doesn't give up. And I love that, the spirit that she is embracing life. And it's made me incredibly proud as she's getting older.
How does she view your running? Do you think that there's any hope of her getting out there with you?
We had so much fun last spring. She said to me, because, you know, unfortunately, she's built a little bit like me. So she said to me last spring, she said she wanted to run with me. So I was like, well, I didn't know quite what to do. Cause I'm like, well, am I going to go back to a couch to 5K? Like, I didn't know where to start her. So there's a great program here in the Valley run through the local hospital. called First Strides. And it's a running group for all ages, and they break you into groups based on your abilities. So we weren't in the same group, but it was the same program. And we would go out and have these little 5Ks after dinner. And we had a good time with it. I think in my usual Susan fashion, I probably go too far with things. So I had her already thinking like, oh, we could do a 10K. We could take vacations and run. And I think I maybe overdid it. So eventually her interest in the whole thing sort of dropped away for now. But she is my number one cheerleader. As the long runs got longer, as I was doing my marathon training, she knew my whole system. I would come home, you know, my husband would have my ice bath for my feet. She'd be getting my drink, you know, and then of course, because a lot of it had to do with driving her somewhere to drop her off. So she's like, the faster I can get mom recovered, the sooner I'm going to get what I want. She's not a dumb girl. You know, so she just was so great. And like would bring me my snacks up here. And cause I just literally lay in my bed like, oh my gosh, how did I do that? You know, and she'd bring me up some snacks and stuff and my yogurt. And now with my broken ankle, she's made sure I had breakfast every morning. She's a teenager, doesn't get up till lunch, but she makes sure the night before I have a cooler with my fruit and my yogurt. So it's amazing to watch the care and interest that she has in my running. She loves coming to my races. And she's not as exuberant as sub 30. I don't think she ever will be, but she is so proud of me and just a great cheerleader.
I'm not sure I'm as exuberant as most people in sub 30. So we'll have to, we'll have to work on that.
Yes.
So in that time after David's passing, and then into, you know, before you kind of have that epiphany on New Year's, you let yourself go. Was your family letting themselves go too? Like, how was that dynamic going on in the house? Was everybody just kind of going, well, this sucks, and we're just going to eat and do unhealthy things?
Yeah, I think certainly for Daisy, I don't think I modeled the best in terms of food, and I wasn't cooking, you know, because when you're not able to really get yourself motivated to go to make a list, I mean, you know, food prep takes time, and it was something that I always enjoyed, but it took too much mental energy that I didn't have. So like, I wasn't going food shopping regularly. So then you don't have certain things. Then, okay, let's get takeout. So I think we all kind of fell apart in our own way. My husband actually got thin. God, I hate him sometimes. A great man, but man, he kind of went the other way. But it was like we each were living in the house, but not together. There was not good communication for a long time. There was not really a plan. Everything was sort of just haphazard. So it was kind of like, well, whatever's here, we eat. If there's not, we'll just go out. You know, but it was me, you know, I was the one saying to Daisy, let's go get donuts. I don't know, it was just like a comfort thing for me. So I would bring her along because that normalizes, you know, when you're going to do bad things, if you have somebody with you, it's not so bad. Right? So I think I showed her some things that were not the healthiest. So I'm enjoying, but I also don't want her to feel pressure about, like, your weight is not how much you're valued in life, right? Like, weight is just a number on a scale. And took me a long time to get that through my own thick head. But I want her to have a healthy relationship with food. And it's fun seeing her, like I said, with the yogurt, or like she'll say, oh, let's go to Wawa and get a, you know, a cookie. Cause I love those big chocolate chip cookies they have at Wawa warmed up. Oh, fantastic. But like now, like we'll look at the calories and we're like, oh, that's not worth it. Or we'll like get one, split it in half, and then each have a quarter. So like just trying to make better like decisions and looking at the labels, reading things, understanding better about what we're eating. Today, she blew my mind today. I was sitting up here and the fire alarm goes off.
Oh no.
She's like, I'm not burning the house down, Mom, I promise. She was making escarole with garlic and
olive. Oh, I love that.
As a snack. I was like, girl, that is so good. I'm so proud of you. So trying to see food more as how do I serve my body so it does the things I want it to do, as opposed to how can I fill my body because something else is uncomfortable. And that takes some guts, you know, for adults and for kids. I mean, for all of us, the food is so accessible and so easy and so full of things we do not need and too much of it. It's not expensive. So, gee, let's get, you know, snacks and a coffee before we go shopping. Let's stop after we shop to get a lunch that's too big. Let's go out to dinner because we've got some friends who want to go out. It adds up. And as you don't, if you're not mindful, it just can spiral. And I've seen it. I track my food even now. I've lost 100 pounds. I still track my food because it's so easy to think, oh, I just had that cheese stick. Oh, I just had that yogurt. I just, and suddenly you've gone through a day of eating, you know, 1600 calories or 2000 calories without even like batting an eye, and you're not full because you're not eating anything nutritional. So I think what running has also given me is the realization that food really is nutrients to energize you so you can actually run, because, you know, 1200 calories of junk will not fuel your run. It just won't happen. And I want to be able to run better. So I pay attention to what I eat. And I think that's where I like what running has given me as a way to look at food in a whole different way.
Yeah. You just described, you know, what I think a lot of people have said is mindful eating versus mindless eating. Right. And that for those of us who suffer from, you know, being overweight, and a lot of us eat mindlessly, and that's what gets us there. And I'm sure as you are having that time where you're grieving, you're just eating whatever, it's mindless eating, right? You're not thinking about any of that. When we get, you know, to that point where you've made this decision to go do this, you know, you get inspired, you're gonna live now. Yes. And we get what I'll call Susan 2.0.
Yes.
You know, is there
athleticism, that's what I call it.
There you go. Is food a part of that equation? Like, do you do all of that at once? Like, are you starting to say, okay, I got to drop weight and I need to be active? Because, you know, weight loss is at least 80% what you eat, yeah, if not 90. The activity helps, but if you continue to eat terribly and go and work out, you're still not going to lose anything.
Right.
So did you combine all that in your head?
So what I started with, because I started so slowly, and I think you can only make changes incrementally, because anything that's going to be, you know, these crash diet things where, oh, in 6 weeks, you're going to lose what? It took me years. So I basically, Susan 2.0 is about 2.5, not quite 3 years old. And that whole first year, it took me at least a year to figure out that food is not a reward, to turn that whole tape off. Food is not a reward. It's never a reward. And food is not good or bad. So, but that took a long time to change just that one thought into something that was more productive. So at the time, like I said, I started with the Fitbit, and my goal was 10,000 steps a day and to stay within the calorie count that was provided through the Fitbit program. So the weight was coming off. Quite frankly, it came off fairly easily. It wasn't too much of a struggle. Like, the first 50 pounds was like easy peasy. Because when you do those, you know, when you're eating so poorly, you make a couple decent decisions and, you know, good things happen. It gets harder, obviously, as you get closer to goal. And I think the one piece for me that got lost in the shorter running, shorter workout periods, you don't need to like carb load, all that stuff people talk about. I don't do any of that. I stay with my same diet all the time. The piece that changed for me was as I got into marathon training, something had to give. So like prior to marathon training, my coach said to me, I had a great aerobic base. I was running, swimming, biking, going to these weightlifting class things, spin class, doing yoga. I did it all. But the problem with a marathon is you need to run a lot of miles. So I started giving up things and stopped cross training. And really, I was so darn tired. I wasn't doing any weight training at all. I would be lying if I said I was, after the first few months. And then the diet, oh my God, I was so hungry.
You got the rungry.
Oh, rungry. I'm like, order me a pizza and have it delivered before I finish my run, because God knows I need at least 4 slices to recover from this thing, you know? And I would say I did not gain, I'm proud of myself for not gaining weight during marathon training, but I didn't lose any weight, didn't lose a pound. And quite frankly, I look terrible compared to how I looked last summer when I was doing triathlons. I'm not happy with how I look. But the nutrition, you've got to get the nutrition dialed in pretty well before you really start to do the athletic stuff, because the nutrition is way more important than the rest of it. The rest of it, though, for my head, is so good. You know, but you've got to get the nutrition pretty well dialed in. And actually, that's something that I was hoping to spend the summer kind of looking at that, and maybe going to shorter races, doing more cross training, because I think it just, overall, it's a better total lifestyle as opposed to trying to run marathons within a body like mine.
Well, I mean, marathons and any body to me are, I mean, I still haven't gotten to that distance because it's incredibly difficult. I mean, it is a lot of running. I did a lot of what I thought was a lot of running, to train for the half marathon that I did, you know, not that long ago. And I can't imagine, I got to the finish of that and literally thought, I can't imagine doubling that at this point. Now, yeah. I know I'm capable of it. You slow down, you do the work. If you're, if you're willing to do the work, it can happen, but it's going to be at least a 80% mental thing for me to get over that hump.
And then 20% in your head.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all in your head.
Yeah. So, so you conquered a marathon. I mean, that's huge. I mean, that had to be, and I know you had a tough, since we're Facebook friends and we're in, you know, sub 30, I've read all of your posts. So I won't spoil too much, but you had a little bit of a rough day, at times out there. But you had a friend out there with you running. So that never hurts. So why don't give us just a brief kind of like, why did you decide to do a marathon and, you know, how that day went?
Yeah. So, 2 weeks before I signed up for the marathon, I was sitting at dinner with a bunch of sub 30 people who were going on and on about marathons and this marathon and they run. And I thought, oh God. And I finally said, I'm like, I'm never running a marathon. Like, it's not happening. 2 weeks later, not a joke at all, I find myself signing up for a marathon. Seems like an odd thing to do, but really the progression was I had done a lot of running, half marathons, did the triathlons, was trying to decide between would I do a half Ironman or a marathon? Like, what would be easier to do? That is a...
I want to get punched in the face or punched in the stomach? I mean, doesn't sound like an easy question.
Right. But I wanted a project. I needed something. So this year, David would be graduating high school, and I knew it was going to be a difficult year, milestone-wise. And I wanted something to work on, something big and hard and scary. And I wasn't really thinking a marathon. I was actually looking at the half Ironman in Maine. And I don't even know how it popped up, but this Maine Coast Marathon on Mother's Day weekend came up probably in my Facebook feed. And David's birthday is May 2nd. Mother's Day for me is just, it's just a horrible day. I don't like it. I didn't like it when the kids were here, both here, because I thought every day was Mother's Day. I love being a mom. I love my kids. I don't want to be celebrated. I don't know that there's a reason to have a special day for it. And now that I don't have David, it's just a reminder of sad things and I don't like it. So I wanted something big, and the date on the marathon was crazy, right? And then the location. So we spent summers, we still do, in Kennebunkport area of Maine. And this marathon ran essentially through the streets that I bike with my dad, through streets I've driven with the kids, past places I've seen for years. And I don't know, it just said, Susan, you need to sign up. So I signed up, and suddenly I was running a marathon. So my best human in my life, Jen, who really helped me through my runners, through the half, my first half, she came up to me at dinner and she said, I'm going to run with you. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. But I'm like, I think you're probably faster, but that's really nice. And she's like, no, I'm going to run with you. And I was like, okay. And at the time, I didn't know what a gift she was giving me. I was too new of a runner. But when somebody says they're going to run with you and be your person, to be your, to have somebody on the course with you who is going to make sure you get through it. And maybe not everybody, maybe I'm special, I don't know. But I needed a person, you know, she was my person. And she opened my gels when my hands were too sweaty and I couldn't open them, you know, ripped them open with her teeth. And she's like, here you go. And so when I signed up for the marathon, the first person I told was Jen. And I said, don't you want to do this with me? And I think it took her like a breath to be like, yeah, I'll sign up. And so there we are. So now we're running a marathon. And, you know, I wanted this. I wanted it. And I love the academic exercise of the marathon. It's just fascinating. There's so many things to try to put together. And another excellent running friend suggested that I get a coach because, you know, I don't know much about this sport. I'm still very new to understanding and really getting into the mechanics of running and like how much running. I was terrified of getting hurt because I couldn't imagine not running. So I was very worried about how do I add mileage properly? Like, do I just go with Hal Higdon's plan like I did for the half? And I interviewed some coaches that she recommended and I decided on one. And that was an excellent decision because it took all the thinking. Like, I didn't have to worry about what am I doing today? I literally would wake up, look in Final Surge and go, okay, coach. And I would do it. And whatever he said to do, I did it because my whole attitude about training is whatever it says on the plan, that's what you do. You might not feel well. It might be raining, snowing, icing. I don't care. Whatever it was, I am the type of person who, if that's what it says to do, that's what we're doing. So I did. And the training cycle was beautiful. I mean, I felt confident. I had a terrible run at my 16 miler was an absolute disaster. I mean, truly, I've never had a bad run. I didn't know what that was really. Like I've had runs that are, you know, harder or whatever. That was a disaster. And thank God for another fabulous person who stayed with me for that run and made sure I finished it. So I did finish, but it was a confidence shaker. You know, I was like, oh my goodness, how am I going to do this? And then, you know, I had those big runs. They take a lot of energy, just mental, the worrying the night before, when are we going to start? How am I going to do this? The nutrition piece. Again, Jen got me into a liquid nutrition because I couldn't deal with the gels. And that was a lifesaver. Another friend said there was a sale on Camelbacks. So we all ordered these Camelbacks. You know, things like the flip belt with the 20 ounces of water is great for a couple miles. But if you're running for hours on end, because I'm a slow runner, you know, you need, so all those things kind of came together beautifully in the training cycle. I mean, struggles, discussion, uncovering, and then it was marathon day and I was like, I'm ready. I was so excited because I not only had Jen running with me, I had a whole tribe of people, you know, just an amazing support team on the ground. And then other people who ran a little bit with us as well. So I had the right support. Everything was in place. I mean, this should have been the victory lap. And unfortunately, around mile 18, I was struck with a nausea that I could not shake it. It was horrible. And it was like, I couldn't figure out, did I need a little Coke? Was I hungry? Was I thirsty? I honest to God, do not know what happened. I described it as like motion sickness. It almost felt like just the constant moving. And finally, the best part, so having had a son who had cancer, it must have been mile 21, I don't know, but I was leaning over the guardrail on the side of the road, and I'm mumbling to Jen, I need some Kytrol or some Zofran. And our other running friends who were there cheering, and I mean, I had the greatest group of cheers that you could ever have. They're looking at me like, what is she like hallucinating? Where are these words coming out of her mouth? but they're antiemetics. So basically something to stop the nausea. And if you could imagine, one of my cheer people has a little problem with some vertigo, and she carries Dramamine with her. And she's handing pills out the car window as they're driving off to the next cheer spot. And I'm just like popping the pill, like, yeah, I'm taking it, whatever it is. I didn't even know what it was at the time. And I did get some relief way, way later, around mile 25. But that stretch was just really, it was just a struggle. And, you know, I always look for signs and things. And there's a part of me that wonders, like, David had that crushing nausea when he was sick. And, like, I wonder, was that me experiencing what he experienced during his, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. That seems crazy too, but I just, he's always there. So I'm like, what was that? I can't describe it. And it didn't happen at all during any training run. So my time was not what I had hoped for, but the overall experience of running a marathon is just, I mean, I finished and I was like, I need to sign up for another one of these. I have to do it again. Cause you can't get it right the first time and probably won't get it right the second time either. But the literally intellectual exercise of preparing is just, it's so consuming. And like, you dig into these little rabbit holes of, you know, what's the best way to massage your calves, or, you know, the minutia of it. I don't, there's something about it that is just highly appealing to me, and I'm curious about it, and curious enough that I'd like to do it again.
I'm that way with the Grand Canyon. I did not have a great crossing rim to rim of the Grand Canyon the first time that I tried it. And I had the nausea that you describe. I had that. And, it was terrible. I've written a blog on it. I think I talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but I can't wait to get back there. Like, I can't, like, that will be something I do, you know, in the next few years is get back there. And it's the same thing. It's that you can't get it right. I eventually finished, right? And unfortunately, my brother had to come down, and I had to lay in a ditch all by myself on the side. It's dark. Oh, there's people walking by. It was terrible, right? And then two, like, studly rangers come down, and they're like, hey, you're going to walk out of here. And I'm like, you're nuts. Like, where's the stretcher? Right. And they're like, we're not carrying you, dude. So, like, you're going to do this. But the thought of food, of anything, was just so horrible at that moment. And I had gotten sick, and it was like, terrible. So it was, I'm reading your race recap and I'm like, oh, I remember that. And I do not like it.
Right. I know. I would definitely want to try it again with taking the Dramamine at the beginning, because it wasn't anything that registered. I mean, and the first, if you looked at my splits, the first 15 miles of the race were beautiful. My goal was, so my coach always says, if you think you're going too fast, or if you think you're going too slow, go slower. That was his mantra to me. And so I had said to Jen, I want to really be controlled in the beginning, because it's easy to get excited, you know, all the adrenaline and stuff. I want to really work on control. And our splits were absolutely on point for a long time. And then it like just completely fell apart. And not the, you know, I've heard about the wall. There wasn't a wall. Mentally, I felt good. Physically, other than nausea, I felt fine.
Was it humid?
It was humid, and I'm a heavy sweater. And I mean, we joke about this in the club. I mean, I sweat more than just about anybody, for sure. And it was humid, but I've run in humidity. Like it just doesn't really make sense. There's nothing about it that makes sense to me even now. I mean, I ate the same pre-race meal. I did everything the same leading up to it. I hydrated well. The one thing that did happen was I had my nutrition pack, you know, my vest on with the liquid nutrition, and I drank, but I was very thirsty. Everything felt salty, and we were running by the ocean. And I remember my coach saying, you should try to mimic the environment you'll be running in. But I've run by the ocean a lot. So it didn't occur to me that this maybe would be problematic. And I just was very thirsty. And I drank a lot of water off the table at mile 18. And I think that was probably part of the problem, because I probably had too much water then. It was a little sloshy. And then it just kind of, fell apart.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on completing it. That's huge. So, and then I'm sure you had some plans, but then somebody decided, you know, hey, there's nobody there. Oh, shoot, there is somebody there.
Yeah.
And you got kind of nicked there.
I did. So I had huge plans. I was running a 15K up in Utica called the Boilermaker, and I was doing that for an organization, a charity that I just love, and I'd raised some money for.
What's the charity?
The charity is called Griffin's Guardians, and they're one of our partners at the St. Baldrick's Foundation where I work, and they raise money to fund pediatric cancer research. So I love my friends in Syracuse for some of our events that we have up there have just become like family, and a bunch of them run it. And I thought, oh, this will be fun. So I signed up for that one. I got a bib to Beach to Beacon, which is in Maine in August, which would be fun, 10K. And then I had the Niagara Falls Marathon in October. So, which I was going to do, I was actually going to drop that down to a half and PR my 15K, 10K, and my half. That was my goal for the summer. And my coach was actually typing my plan as I then sent him a message saying I'd been hit by a car because I was out doing my first run post-marathon a week and a day later that Monday. And I went to run across the street. There was nobody there. And unfortunately, the woman said to the police officer, I didn't see her. I run in fluorescent. I run safely. And it's been devastating. I'm sitting here actually with ice on my ankle. I came back from PT. But my ankle's broken in two places, and I can't stand on it for 6 weeks. And it feels like a death sentence. I mean, I really am struggling with how do you maintain a positive attitude and how do you maintain embrace life when everything that I have done, especially this last year, has been so dialed in and so powerful. I mean, my workouts are like long. I do a lot. As a triathlete, I love two workouts a day, you know, swim and bike and run, whatever. And now I'm just basically, I sit in my bed a lot. And it's a dangerous time, you know, because the food, and I don't know how to eat right. Like, so I started working out after I kind of got the diet dialed in. So now I'm like, well, how many calories do you eat when you're now totally sedentary, but you're trying to heal? And I feel like I literally wake up sometimes and I'm like, did I gain 100 pounds back? Like I have nightmares about like how fat I'm getting. And I might be getting fatter. I don't know. But like, I feel my fitness slipping away and just the mental piece of that and trying to keep yourself in a space of like, it's temporary. By July 4th, the boot's going to be off. I won't be running. I'll be starting a couch to 5K again, event, you know, probably by September, I hope. But like it's temporary. And so part of it is I also have to remember, and I do, you know, I've been thinking about a lot about David. I'm going to survive this. This is a temporary, disastrous thing. But I didn't die, which is amazing. I have a broken ankle. I can do this. I've done much harder things than recover from a broken ankle. So I go to PT like the boss that I am. I get dressed like I'm going for a run, and off we go to PT, and they know I'm all business. And the doctor knows, apparently when you give me narcotics, I just start going on about I'm a runner. You have to put it back together so I'm perfect to run. So, you know, I think I'm a couple weeks into this now. I've had my pity party, and it's time to get down to business and treat this like life, you know, like I do training. I mean, this is the next round. Like, I thought I was going to have this awesome PRing summer, and I was excited for that and what would be next. And that's not going to happen. And I have to let it go. And I have to just look forward and, you know, work on things that I had. Like I said, I kind of didn't do the weight training piece. The nutrition still needs to get, you can be a little sloppy when you're marathon training, because if you have a little dessert, you're going to run it off tomorrow. So there's some things to dial in on, and I'm going to look towards doing those things instead of looking back on what could have been, because there's nothing there to find. You know, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that'll drive you nuts. I mean, I have no doubt you're going to come back stronger than ever. I really honestly just move those PRs to next spring. You're going to have a great next spring and summer and get it. Now, how you are going to do all those PRs, including that Boilermaker, sounds like just a terrible race to me.
Oh, it is. I mean, listen, the heat just kills me. I really don't do well in the heat at all. And I don't do well on these giant hills. So it's up in Utica in July, humid, hot, hilly, all guaranteed. But the thing that I love more than running itself is the community of people that I have found. And there isn't a race I would say no to if the right people were there. And, you know, we have so many people to give us inspiration in our club. And if you tell people you're a runner, it opens like a whole new door of conversation with people, because what do runners like to do? We love to talk about, I mean, it's all we talk about.
Running and food.
Running and food, pretty much. That's, yeah, yep. And what kind of shoes do you like?
Yeah, right.
You know, when they tried to cut off my Belega sock in the emergency room, I was like, what are you doing? That's my special sock. The sock had to go. So, you know, I think it's a community of people that I just find to be amazing. There are good stories. When you spend a little bit of time with any number of people, it's amazing how people got into it, why they're into it, what they've done with it, and all those side surprises that running has given me, the confidence to do things I didn't think I could do. And like my non-running friends will say, oh, I can never run a 10K. And I'm like, well, neither could I until I did. I mean, you know, it gives you this level of confidence in life about going after things and taking a risk just to see what's going to happen. Am I ever going to win a race? I guarantee you not. It's not happening. And I'm not in this to win a race. I'm in it because for me, it's an outlet that gives me great hope about just how, I don't know. I love the race day environment. I love the energy and the excitement, and suddenly anything's possible. And as grownups, we're like forced to do adult things that are just like pay the bills, go to work, you know, and we forget how fun life can be. And running to me is like adult fun time. It's like you get to be a kid. We go out, we run. So what do? I have my running friends. We go run. Then we stop at Starbucks. We get our coffee. We sit. We talk about life. We get in our cars. We go home and back to our normal life. But that time, whether it's an hour or three or five, is like a time to just play with life. See what's out there. I mean, when I jumped off the boat last June for Escape the Cape, the first triathlon I did, I'm afraid of heights. I don't go on a ladder because I'm afraid to go up high. And I jumped off of a 12-foot boat into the ocean and then swam to shore. And I had no idea if I could do it. I'd never swum in open water before. I wouldn't recommend that, actually. But I'm just saying, being honest, I hadn't done an open water swim before. So it gives you the confidence, and you're with people who also seem to share a common value stream that you find, like risk-taking, and not risk-taking that's dangerous and bad all the time.
Right, right.
But like people who share that, like esprit de corps, just let's go. Let's see what happens. Let's take care of each other. I mean, and again, going back to the generosity of offering to run with somebody, you know, when you give up your race, or the race doesn't matter for you because somebody else has a goal, when you can do that for somebody else, I love that. When I joined Sub 30, I couldn't give anything because I didn't know anything. I mean, I remember sitting down after a 4-mile run, sitting on the bottom of a set of bleachers, crying because I was like, I've never run so far. This is amazing. I ran 4 miles. And I'm like, I don't even get dressed for under 5. Like, who could be bothered, right? I'm not going to clean some clothes because, you know. So your perspective changes and you can suddenly give something back. And I've had that opportunity a little bit to do some of that. And, you know, it feels good. It's this give and take. You know, we're not on the podium. It's not about the podium or the prize money. It's about just being able to be alive, because you vibrate in a higher caliber when you're running.
Yeah.
Just
I agree. I mean, I think it embraces the whole, well, that's going to be repetitive now, but it's the whole embrace life thing that that your son had. So, I mean, to me, running does that. And I'll give you a little tidbit from today. I did not want to run today. And it's been a long time since I just didn't want to run. And I had some speed work on the schedule. And I'm pro coach also, even if it is Andy. I mean, I love Andy.
Silver Fox.
That's right. It's fantastic. I mean, he's done wonders for, my running. I never thought I could be this fast, at all. So, you know, I had a mile warm up and then 4x400 repeat, with 400 meter rest. And I, because of circumstances, couldn't get it done in the morning. So I had to go out in the afternoon when it's, 80 some odd degrees. And, and I didn't want to do it. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just postpone this till tomorrow. Maybe I'll just move up the easy run. And then I thought about the fact that, I'm going to interview Susan tonight and she's laid up in bed with that ankle. I'm like, how do I not go? I can run. So how do I not get out there and run? And for me, sub 30 has done that so many times. I've gotten a push when I've needed it, from certain members, and, a couple of them, Megan and Sarah are always there if you need that push. If you need the verbal hug, you've got that going on there too. So there's a push, there's a pull, but I feel like, that whole, the rising tide, that's how sub 30 feels to me. Yes. And I can't explain it until you're in it. It's like, you can't give it words. Like, even, so Gretchen, not a runner, anti-running, not going to run, just isn't going to happen. Right. And I still think that she would be great in sub 30, because I think she would see just inspiring things happening all the time. But since she hasn't joined, I just tell her about them all. So now she just gets a verbal. I'm like her Facebook wall for that.
That is my job. My husband doesn't have Facebook. And actually, I call them Team Sizzle. I'll give them a straight up shout out. I love Bill and Sandra. They're just amazing people. So they were just messaging, could they come by on Sunday? Because they're going to be in the area. And I was trying to explain to Tom, and he's like, oh, the costume people.
Yeah, that's true. They are the best costume people on the planet.
Right. But it's like, my family knows these people because, well, some that we've been lucky. We're fortunate to have quite a few here in the area. But even like when they met Sarah up in Maine, it's like, oh, we know all about you, because these people, I know it's an online community. And again, I was never like one for online, like feeling like I know people. Or like my first race, the Super Bowl 10K, Dorothy Hughes said she would pick me up. So I was like, oh, great. Here's my address. Come by. My husband's like, you just gave our address to somebody that you've never met and they're going to drive you to the race. But what if, and I'm like, is she going to kidnap me? We're in Lycra and like spandex. Like, are you kidding? But like, there's this intimacy amongst the club that is as real as you allow it to be. So I think, for me, I am what you see is what you get. And I always just put it out there, whatever's on my mind, good, bad, or indifferent, probably makes people crazy sometimes, but like, I am who I am. And then when I meet people in real life, and I love meetups, it's like meeting an old friend. I know you already, Pete, because we've already shared a lot of things, in that virtual space. So the time together is like, feels real. It is real because it's a community, and you can create community in a ton of different ways. And I think we're really lucky to have such a big group so far around the country and the world. And it just makes it really fun because you don't want to quit, right? Like, what's next? Because you can't quit now. Like, you're sucked in.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think that's one of the things that I really admire about you is that it's you do put it all out there, and the good, the bad, the ugly when you're struggling. But no matter what, even in the posts where you're struggling, you still end them all with a positive note. You still somehow circle back to the fact that it's going to be good. It's going to be okay. And as a matter of fact, it's probably going to be great. But you've got to talk yourself into it sometimes. And but so when you share that, it helps, you know?
And you know what, Pete, though, but that's what it is. It's the realization life is hard. Things don't go well all the time. It's not all roses and flowers, glitter and rainbows, but it's how you want to look at it. So I can look at anything and go, oh, this is terrible. Oh, this is hard. Instead, I look at it as it's an opportunity. So even in the struggle, you have to look deeper than what the momentary painful struggle is to see where you can go. And I think what David gave me, the greatest gift that kid has could have given his mother, and it pains me that he didn't get to see this, but he gave me a huge gift, just, you know, to stay brave. And even when things hurt or you're scared, for whatever reason, I mean, and it can be your mom, you know, fell and broke her hip, or, you know, you're looking like you might lose your job, or gosh, you don't want to go to the food store because it's raining. Look for the silver lining of you can go walk in the rain, or, you know, you can spend time with your mom in the nursing home while she rehabs, or, you know, you get to do and take on something that never seemed possible. And I think, you know, for me, embrace life is just how you go about living, and living because it's a gift. And it sounds so hokey, but I truly do think that every day that you wake up and you get to see your kid have a milestone, or even when you say goodbye to somebody, I hope when you say goodbye, you've had enough time to make it a life worth living and sharing with them. And, you know, looking at the day as the glass is half full, and realizing that, yeah, my ankle hurts, man. I'm sitting here with ice on it. I want to be out running. I'm jealous. I'm envious of everybody running on Global Running Day. I didn't run a mile on Global Running Day. I didn't do anything. I sat here in my bed. But when you're suffering, you can also cheer other people up. And by giving that out, by giving people the hope for whatever, it gives you a sense of it's going to be okay. So a lot of the times when I write and when I say things, like, I do that for me because I need to hear it and remember the sky is not falling. This is temporary. And maybe there's a deeper lesson in there. Sometimes things just stink, but maybe there is. And I love to look for that. So I think that's just a huge gift that I got from my son and from the experience. And it's how I choose to look at it. And I know a lot of bereaved families that don't do it the way I do it. But for me, the best way to remember David and to keep his spirit alive is to live like every minute is like the most exciting thing that's ever going to happen is going to be right now. So that's how I do everything.
That's awesome. Well, I think David, I'm going to be a little braggadocious here. I think David would have liked our little Be Better Today hashtag. I think he would have enjoyed that one.
I think Be Better Today would absolutely be something he would have enjoyed. And I think the part that just bugs me the most about all this is, like, he would have loved this stuff. He would have eaten this up, and he would have just so enjoyed being part of his mom's running community.
Well, I mean, quite honestly, he is. I mean, that's the fact. I mean, he's a part of this. If you're paying attention, and, you know, I always say about sub 30, you get out of it what you put into it, and you've put a lot into it. I think you get a lot out of it. And, you know, I've obviously never got to meet David, but I've been inspired by him and what his classmates have done and all the stuff that you've posted. It's been just an amazing journey, for me to watch. And I've only been involved in the club for just, I don't know, a year and a few months, 3 or 4 months. So it's not even that long. But I've really feel connected to it. And the odd part is, and I don't know, I mean, you met them in person kind of first, or at least a few people. And
yeah,
I mean, I hadn't met anybody. I signed up, and within like a week, I'm like, oh, I really feel like this is kind of what I've been missing.
Yeah.
So it's been a really interesting journey that way.
Well, we've been lucky to get you, because I've enjoyed from your first posts. You know, there's certain people who just kind of stand out sometimes, and your journey has stood out. And I think it's been, it's just so fun to be able to watch people evolve and take on new things. I mean, I get excited. I couldn't imagine running a fast mile the way like Megan does.
It's crazy.
Just blows my mind. It's awesome. It's crazy. Right. But I love like that's her thing. And then like Lauren down in Philly, who's, you know, she's got a run streak that's 18 years long or something like that. Everybody's kind of taken this sport and done what they need. They're getting what they need, whatever it is. I run long and slow because my head it needs that time alone. It gives me time to take stuff out and look at it. I don't need to run fast. I mean, I want to be faster because I think it's cool to run with the cool kids and be fast, but like, I don't know. I'll get there. I will get there. But all of this takes, it's also about like time. Running is one of those sports that like, as we age, we can get better. The more years we put into it, we get better. And I think there's just so many life lessons in running if you want to look for them. And I'm one of those people who's always looking for the lesson. So I don't know, just keep your heart open. I say no to nothing. If you ask me to do something from the club, I'm probably gonna be like, okay, you know, and then we'll figure it out. We'll sort it through later, whatever the details are, and I'll train up to it. But be open. And I think that's the best thing with anything in life. Just be ready for the experience and embrace it.
That's awesome. So I have one more question. Just because I think your experience could help. Do you have any advice for people who are in the grieving process, in that bereavement process? Do you have anything that you could, I know you can't tell them what to do exactly, right? Because you don't, everybody's journey is different, but is there anything that you could point anybody to, any advice that you have for people in that situation?
I have lots of advice on that, actually. Number one, have zero expectations of yourself. Give yourself grace, because grief, it just knocks your whole game off. You just don't know how you're going to feel. And I think, you know, as people, we tend to be hard on ourselves and we tend to expect everything to just keep going. And eventually the machine breaks down and you have to take time to grieve in a way that is safe for you and comfortable for you and in the space and time you need. So carve it out and be selfish. If that means, you know, maybe you were like the social, you know, you were the PTA president for whatever, and you just don't feel like you can do it, step back from it. Because I think you have to grieve. If you don't handle what has happened, you can't move forward. So I think slowing down, taking time, going inside, I call it the journey of going inside. And I think the reason running has helped me is because with running, you can, you know, you run for a lot of hours. So you're a lot in your head, and not every run is with people. And I actually prefer to run alone sometimes because I have things I need to just kind of work through. But whatever your outlet is, maybe it's knitting or baking, or just sitting quietly, you know, whatever your thing is, but take time for you. Truly take time. Truly feel it. The suffering, the absolute agony, like get in that place to get comfortable with that feeling and those emotions and know how you feel and respond, and then figure out how am I going to fix it. So when a friend of mine once said, grief is like getting knocked over by a wave, and every time you try to get up, another wave knocks you down. The way you recover and come back from grief and suffering of any kind, to me, is how do you fill up your toolbox with the skills you need to get up when it gets rough? What is it that you need to do? So if you learn that your go-to is to get out the box of Oreos and go to town, right? But you realize this is not healthy coping. What are you going to do? How are you going to handle that? Now, in the midst of grief, you can't do that. But like thinking about stuff before it happens is also a really good idea if you can. To learn how to cope. What are your coping skills? You need a lot of coping skills. And what I realized from dealing with what happened to David, I really didn't have very good coping skills because I'd had this charmed life. I'd had nothing happen. So I don't think I knew how to deal with what happened. And I also think it's such a train wreck of a thing to have experience with. I don't know that you could prepare yourself, but taking time to slow down enough to give yourself space and grace to figure it out and find a way forward. And if you're in a relationship with somebody, I think giving them the same space and grace, because they're going to do it differently than you do. So you both experience a loss. You're not going to experience the same emotions at the same time. So figuring that out, being willing to be honest about what you need. I don't like martyrs, you know, being a martyr doesn't help anybody. Say what you need. I need to be alone for 10 minutes. I need whatever. Say it honestly and do it. And don't just try to press through. I think for a long time, I just had this vision of everybody thinking like I had everything together. So I was like play acting. Oh, I'm great. I'm great. Who's great? Like 2 months after their son dies. Like, that's such a lie. And I think I lied a lot. So I think that trying to be as authentic as you can, and also more importantly than the grieving person, if you have a friend or a family member who has something happen, don't say, what do you need? Tell me what you need. Don't do that. Go do something. Bring them a meal. Send them flowers. Stop by and just say, I'm here to give you a quick hug, nothing else. Go do it. Because if you ask people what they need, we're all too proud. We don't need anything. Everything's fine. You know, you don't want to inconvenience somebody. So don't say to a grieving person, what can I do for you? They don't even know. I couldn't have answered that question. Even now with the broken ankle. Oh, what can I do? I don't know. But you know what? What has happened for me is by being honest, I now have people who just show up. I have people who just come with the Panera, come with the Starbucks, come with the goofy books, and cultivate that in your life, because if you do, you will have the right people when tragedy strikes, and then you'll have a good support system. And the other thing is, nobody can help you. It sounds cruel. There is no comfort in grief, ever. Grief is one of the most lonely experiences. It is an individual journey. It is hard and ugly. And it takes time. And I think if you know those things, I don't know if it makes it any easier. And if somebody had said that to me early on, I'd be like, shut up. Don't talk to me, you know. But I don't know. Like, that's the thing that I realize, is it just takes a lot of time. And I've just learned to give myself the time. And I've dialed back in a lot of things. I don't do a lot of things that I used to do. I don't feel obligated to do things. I do what I love. So I don't know if that's helpful for somebody who's grieving, you know, but I would say if you're brave enough to ask for help, ask for help. I thought I was having a heart attack for like 8 weeks after David died. And I finally said to Tom, I'm like, can you have a heart attack for 8 weeks and not die? And he's like, I don't think you're having a heart attack. I was essentially having like a panic response. And, you know, I had to take some antidepressant medication because it was just, I had to get my body to stop being in this like flight or fight response. So oftentimes like what happens, you just don't even know what's going to happen or how you're going to respond. And in the case of a child who dies, like, bring them up. Like, one of my favorite things, like with David's classmates this year especially, has been they're doing all these things that I never, as an adult, I wouldn't think of them. I would think they were weird and strange, like, you know, but the kids are making these shirts and they're having these gold out rallies and all these things. And I'm like, and seeing the kids driving it, having his friends talk to me about him, or somebody shares a memory about him that I didn't know because I wasn't there, you know, whatever it was, I love that. I love hearing people say David's name. I love when people ask me to talk about him, because that's all I've got is my own opportunity to share him with people. So if somebody dies, even if it's a grandma, right? So grandma's 96, it's the circle of life. People die. Tell me about your grandma. I'd love to hear her. What's her story? You know, share that, give people that time to share their story with you about what happened. I had a dear friend who lost their best friend to breast cancer. And she just said to me, actually, the other night, she said, the thing about you that I like is you just let me talk, you know? And I realize I've talked like for over an hour now, pretty much straight. But I can learn to be quiet, and that helps people to let them tell their story and to talk. I think that's just a gift.
Well, I don't know if the advice helps somebody that is in a process right now, but if they hear this, I think there was so much good advice in there that it could help them down the road without them even realizing it. So I appreciate you sharing it, and I have kept you for over an hour and a half. It would be like our longest podcast ever. It's like a record.
I told you I could talk a lot.
No, it's been great. I mean, I've loved it. I've learned a lot about you. I've gotten a lot of great insights. I didn't cry, which I really thought I would. So
I barely did. I only cried a teensy bit.
I know. And I didn't at all, which is like for me a huge, you have no idea. That's why I couldn't keep drinking the wine. It'd be like flowing then. So, but yeah, we should probably wrap it up, but I want to thank you so much for taking all this time and, letting us ask you, well, me in this case, ask you so many questions, and for you being so open and honest. I really, really appreciate it.
It's been, honestly, it's a gift to me is what it feels like. It doesn't feel like an obligation. It feels like an awesome, I'm so grateful, and I love the Fat Man Chronicles. I think the name is hysterical, and I think you guys do such a great job, and giving people like me an opportunity to share a story is just, it's an awesome gift. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. And we're going to go ahead and end it here.
Okay.
We can't thank Susan enough for being on the podcast with us. That was an outstanding interview. It's a long episode. I mean, we're going to be...
Hopefully people are still awake.
Yeah, we're going to be... I'm pretty sure we're like 2 hours on this thing, but I think it's totally worth it because Susan's story is inspiring and enlightening.
100%.
And hopefully people get a lot out of it. So anyway... Thank you for listening to episode 37 of the Fat Man Chronicles. The music is You Got Me Wrong by Safar. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fat Man Stories and on Facebook at facebook.com/Fat Man Stories. Our website is fatmanchronicles.com, where you can read blogs, go to past archives, listen to the podcast. And we encourage you to give us a review on Apple Podcasts and subscribe in whatever your favorite podcast app is. And if you want to flaunt some Fat Man Chronicles FMC gear, go over to fatmanchronicles.com/shop and pick some up. That's it for this episode. Get out there and be better today.